Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on the 14th of May, after we took a week off because I was down at the Adobe Max conference, which is a big confab in Los Angeles where they roll out some new ideas and new products.
I missed you.
Why?
It's not like it was 1 week. It was 2 weeks. Think about it. You know, we took 1 week off, but it was really 2 weeks since we talked on the show.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
You know, so people must be getting all fidgety.
They probably stopped listening.
I don't know. I still get emails. Yeah. You know, they're like, "Where's John?
Where are you going? You guys suck. You guys never come on enough."
So this Adobe, this is an annual event, right?
Yeah.
And they come out with all their ideas of what's happening for the future in terms of the new product launch. One of the things I think they announced was that they're not going to be doing any more box products, right?
Yeah, done.
Yep. All over.
Done. Yeah.
That was a big announcement. Well, Microsoft did that a few years ago. They talked about getting rid of the boxes.
They never did, though.
Right. Well, they talked about it. And they were in partners with a company called Digital River, which would do the secure downloading and licensing. So now Adobe is doing this. This is also after they went, they went from a pay-for model for a software, for a license, to a subscription model.
Right.
So what does this all mean?
Well, it means if you're a serious user of the product, it's actually going to, I think, by my math, unless you're just using one thing, but they actually will rent you or let you subscribe to just Photoshop, for example. A lot of people don't realize that. But generally speaking, they want you to subscribe to the whole suite, which is a lot of products, and a lot of them you're never going to use ever. But you have them, and they would have been expensive. And generally speaking, you would have bought a suite of some sort anyway. And this is probably cheaper on a yearly basis if you're constantly upgrading. Now, what the Adobe noticed, and this is the way I used to do it: you'd buy a product from them, like Creative Suite 3,
right?
And then you'd skip 4, and maybe you'd skip 5, maybe not. You buy 5. And then you'd buy maybe 6, maybe. So it was like, you know, you're using one of the products and you kind of just use it until it, you know, somebody says, "Look at these features you're not using." Oh, okay, right. I have to upgrade. So right. They'd rather have, so it's inconsistent cash flow. So the subscription model, which is cheaper, but not cheaper if you only buy the product once every 5 years. But you are kind of forced to get on the treadmill. And once you're on the treadmill, it's great money for Adobe. And I talk to a lot of guys behind the scenes, and they all say, this thing is kicking. So it's like they've decided to just drop the shrink wrap. You won't be able to buy Creative Suite 7. There won't be one.
Now, one of the things that it forces software companies to do who are on a process where they have to innovate in order to excite people. So it's exactly like you're saying. So you have a product that is a great product. Let's say it's, Photoshop number one. And then they come out with something else and something else. And you're like, oh, I don't use that one feature that they're really hemming and hawing about. But wait a minute. Hey, here's that healing brush thing that you just got to get, because it just, no longer do you have to do all this crazy stuff. You just touch it and, blemish goes away. Well, that I can use because I happen to do a lot of portrait work.
Or I'm a screw up and I need to fix things.
Right. I have a bad case of acne and God, oh man, this is a blessing, right? So now the thing is that in that scenario, people wouldn't upgrade for some time. But you're saying that this is better because now they're going to get on a regular update and they have to stay on the program. But does that stifle innovation on Adobe's part? Do they really care as much as creating the next wow feature?
Well, this is an interesting question, which I never brought up, but now that you mention it, I was thinking about this. Adobe, I've written about this before. Adobe is one of the few companies, if you put them next to Microsoft, for example, that they have a product like Photoshop or Illustrator. They are constantly upgrading it. They're like they're paranoid. Right. It's like, oh my God, you know, somebody must be chasing us. I don't see anybody, but it's right. possible they are. And so Microsoft, meanwhile, they look around. They say, oh, well, you know, nobody's who's got anything close to what we're doing. We'll just coast. We won't do anything special. We'll just milk the cash cow. Adobe's never done that. And so I think they're in a mindset of constantly upgrading and improving from years of doing it as a paranoid company. And I'm hoping they don't fall into that pattern of, geez, this is easy money. What's the point of doing any extra work here, just rolling in dough? So
I mean, it's the only thing I see as a negative on that.
No, I agree 100%. I think it's a great observation.
So there's a lot of things that are happening since you and I spoke last. Most of it centers around the same discussion, which is this incredible amount of cash or liquidity that's being pumped into the systems. Do you know that – I don't know if we've talked about this, but I just read about this this week. Since the downturn in 2008 when – let's just call it the bust, that general time frame, when the world just went kaput. Do you know how many – just take a guess – how many central bank cuts, in other words, rate cuts, have been done worldwide since then? But, you know, the total of – every country's rate, so they go from 7% to 7.25%. I mean, 7% to 6.5% to 6%, whatever it is. The total number of rate cuts since then.
I wouldn't have a clue. 500?
511. That was ridiculously close for somebody who doesn't have a clue. How'd you get that?
I just sounded right.
511, and there was two more last week. We had, I think, Poland, Israel, and South Korea. Now, South Korea didn't want to do a rate cut. They didn't really need to do a rate cut. The only problem is what's interesting is that they have no choice because Japan is crushing them. The yen is down again. It's at to 102.
This yen thing is killing me.
It's unbelievable. It's 102.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
The market's up again. This year the market's up 50% in pure terms, a lot less in yen terms. And it's the companies there. I mean, like Sony is up 10% today. I'm thinking a car company. No, what was the name of the company? I think it was a car company. It was up like
Toyota.
90, maybe it's Toyota.
Nissan.
I think it was Toyota. It was up 90% this year.
What?
Yeah. Something. This is some ridiculous numbers that are coming out because they knocked the yen down by 18%. And it's creating all sorts of opportunities. And the other thing that's starting to kick in there is tourism.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
People from around the area in Asia are like, well, where are we going to go? Where are we going? What do you mean, where are we going to go? We're going to the discount mall over there.
Right. Right now I'm looking at it. It's 102.22.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was as high as 102.75, I believe it was today at some point.
And within recent memory, the two of us, we're discussing this when it was 75.
Yeah, that's correct. And that was also after the earthquake. 2 years ago, it was 75, after the earthquake or the tsunami and the whole. And it was mind-boggling that it kept on going, getting stronger at a time where the country was in real trouble. We did a lot of research on this, and we looked at post earthquake slash major events in Japan. There was this initial move, and then all of a sudden there was a change, and it got much weaker. Well, we waited for 6 months, 8 months, and it just kept on getting stronger and stronger. It wasn't until this guy Abe that came in and says, you know, of course we're not doing this for purposes of weakening the yen. We're doing this for purposes of stimulating the economy. that this is going to be, the way we're going. And it's amazing. I mean, there is so many aftershocks from this. You know, we got the slight last week, a plunge in oil, a plunge in gold, treasuries moving. Do you remember that 2 weeks ago I said one of my picks is going to be I want to short the Japanese bonds?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was the worst 4 days in 10 years in terms of the yield appreciation. And I sent you a chart. You can check this out. You can see the chart says 10-year JGB.
Yeah, hang on.
So the JGBs have been selling off. Now, that doesn't seem logical because the Japanese government came in yesterday and bought up, I think it was 500 trillion yen of bonds, and they're buying bonds. They want to double the purchase of bonds. They want to keep it, you know, flushing the yields as low as they can. But meanwhile, the markets are going against them. And Japanese bonds, which were extremely low, they were down in the, I mean, the 10-year bond was, I mean, really low, has gone up probably, I don't know, close to, the yield now has gone up 60%, which, you know, from 0.2 to 0.35. But that's a big move.
In terms of debt level.
But this is the biggest move in 10 years on a four-day basis, because it really started moving about 4 or 5 days ago. And it's spiking up dramatically. Again, it's spiking up tonight as well, as the yen has gone down. And the Nikkei has passed the 15,000 mark. I remember standing somewhere and listening to a report. They said that their goal is to get this to 13,000. And that was only like 3 months ago. And I said, oh my gosh, that's a big move. I said 15,000 today. The Nikkei.
Well,
quite astonishing. Now, talk about stifling innovation, stifling change. So now these companies in Japan, what do they have to do to make their profits increase, essentially? Nothing, right?
Right. Just the change in the exchange rate makes money.
Right. So now these companies have structural problems. They have, you know, all these people that are on lifetime programs for pensions. You know, you don't fire anybody there, right? You have all sorts of problematic overall, mechanisms to manage companies. So what do they have to do? What's their incentive now to change any of that, to make themselves more competitive?
I don't see one.
Right. So the benefit to them right now is the yen, and it's kind of the same thing in our country. We push all this money in, but we don't do any structural changes. So we just kind of paste over it. You know, like I said, it's a giant pile of dog shit that's covered with chocolate coating. It looks good from the outside, but I wouldn't suggest taking a bite.
Yeah, well, that metaphor could use some work.
You want to work on that a little bit? You want me to kind of polish it, or?
Yeah, polish the turd.
Polish the turd. Polishing the turd. All right, so final thing on Japanese situation is the G7 met last weekend. And again, they said, hey, we really kind of applaud Japan for what they're doing. But we do not want to have...
I love that, by the way. Yeah,
but nobody should be targeting exchange rates.
No, heaven forbid.
No, do not do that. But if you're doing this for your, you know, if you just don't... Basically what they said was, do me a favor. Come here, guys. Don't say that you're trying to weaken the yen. Don't talk about the yen. Just say we're involved in a heavy stimulus program to reinvigorate the economy and to stoke inflation. Say that, we're happy. You know, but that's all. The dollar is moving higher. It's at 83.5. Gold is moving lower. And we're seeing the same thing happen with copper and all that.
I have a question about this. I actually remember this a lot. This goes on all the time. U.S. wants to strengthen the dollar. They want to lower. They want to do something. They want it to go up. They want it to go down. They never really talk about wanting it to go down, but it's always a benefit for exports.
Yeah.
And they try to do this. And we've seen other people try to save their currency. Oh, the currency is going down the toilet. We've got to do something about it. And nobody manages to move anything at all. It's just like the world at large overrides them with its own ideas about the way things should be. How do the Japanese pull this off? Because I've never seen it before.
Well,
working this well. I mean, they move this thing a lot.
Well, a couple things. First of all, if you look at something called a trade-weighted exchange rate, which is what is the real value? What's the fundamental value of this compared to how much you're exporting, importing, the value of your exports, etc.? You know, you kind of do a valuation of the currency. The yen was terribly overvalued. There's no question about that. I don't think anybody thought anything different. And the reason that was is there was a big safety trade that, you know, you go to Japan and then, you know, they're going to kind of not do anything. They're impotent. They can't seem to get their currency to come down. It's been this way for years, and we can store our currency there. They have such a ridiculously low rate. We could borrow against things. And okay, so that was the setup. So now what happens? They tried to do some further stimulative efforts that is, you know, geared to bring down the yen over the last number of years. Nothing's working. This time they decide, all right, if we're using means that the market can understand and can put their arms around, and it seems to not really work, and it works for a little while but then backs off, let's go so far to the outside. Let's ridiculous numbers that even if we create jaw-dropping amounts of stimulus and doubling our monetary base and buying of bonds, and that would shock the world, let's double that. So what they did is they came out with just an unbelievably ridiculous level and commitment that basically they're going to intervene, and now you're going to be fighting the government directly. You know, they're not going to sit there passively sitting there and just saying, okay, we're going to do this and see how it works. I mean, you're going to go punch for punch with the government. Nobody wants to deal with that. Plus, if they're that gung-ho about it, basically the traders, the speculators say, what an opportunity we have. We could just short the crap out of the yen, and we know the government's behind us, so let's play along. So there was billions made on this trade. You know, with futures and currency forex pairing. And so what happened is now we're starting to see a lot of things like I said, they shorted the yen, they had money, they borrowed money from Japan, they took money out, they bought other things like the bonds of Italy have dropped 250 basis points in yield since this all happened. Is it because Italy's any better? No, it's because they're looking for yield, and they just started, there was so much money floating around now, they're just buying up everything. So that's the kind of crazy stuff that's going on right now, and why we're seeing this dysfunction in the markets, and why the dollar's going up so much, because we're not going to compete with them. As a matter of fact, our economy's leveling off to a point that there's talk about the Fed slowing down bond purchases. So now the table's set. You think you have a bit of a checkmate here. Europe doesn't want their currency to go down, right? So you know they're not going to actively do that, so you can start buying the euro, even though it's terrible fundamentals. The U.S., their economy is getting a little bit better, so you could buy their currency. So you got all these means to potentially sell the yen. And then, you know, the government is, you know, in this for the long haul. This is their last effort. I'm not sure what happens after this or what can happen.
Well, what else would they want to do? I mean, they've got the yen where they want it, I think.
Well, they could do a forced revaluation, but that's not going to happen. You know, they can go in and say, hey, that yen that you had yesterday, it's 100 bucks, 100 yen for the dollar. You know what? Now you're going to get 200 yen for the dollar.
Well, they're not going to do that.
No.
No.
Well, they did that, but not at the same level.
But so, I think they're where they want to be. They want to have be competitive in the export market, and they don't want the Toyotas to be costlier than a Ford.
Right. Well, I think they won that battle so far, and if nothing else, I mean, if the stock market's up 60 or 70%, and they got earnings potentially, the earnings aren't there yet, but the earnings that will be rolling in, tourism is back. But the problem, John, is you can't just do this without affecting your neighbor. Look at the greatest problem right now. The Australian dollar is below parity with the dollar now. It's 99 something. It's like a buck and change the other day. $1.03.
Yeah, $1.03.
Which is a problem. You have Korea, which is freaking out because they have a similar export business to Japan.
Right. Same.
Yeah, same. And now all of a sudden, you know, it's like walking down the mall and there's two shops next to each other and they both sell the same things and one's 20% less. I guess I'll go over there.
Okay. Now, before you go on with this explanation, you're assuming that it seems to me that they wanted to do this at some point, but they, without going all in, taking every possible thing they could do to make this happen and to make it do a run, they couldn't do it. They couldn't do the slow creep. There was no technique for it.
Right.
So what was the alternative? There wasn't one.
Well, they've been doing the alternative for years.
Yeah, it hasn't done anything.
Correct. No, exactly.
You had the nuke plants blow sky high, and the yen got stronger.
Right. But so now the problem, though, is that, you know, or the question is, did they unleash a monster to a point that there'll be such a flight of money from Japan? Why the hell would you want to hold money in anything Japanese if the yen's going to keep on getting devalued? So you buy the Japanese market, and it makes 2% today. Meanwhile, you just lost 1.5% on the yen. What do you make? And you buy bonds at 0.25% at best that are leaking constantly because the value of their money is lower. I mean, you know, it's questionable on where this ends.
Does anybody think this will overshoot?
Oh yeah,
really?
Oh yeah, you could have a
so that's the real problem. Yeah.
You could have. I'm not trying to be doom and gloom. I'm giving you the side.
No,
of the
I like
discussion.
It. I like it.
Okay. All right. Let me tell you what's going to happen. what the potential? I mean, really far off potential is that there is such a run on from both, not only from foreigners but from Japanese as well. And as a matter of fact, last month was the first month that we saw a massive buying of net buyers of foreign equities and foreign bonds and foreign goods, if you will, investments from the Japanese. There was a huge amount of money pulled out of the Japanese markets last month, which is another reason. That's when that news came out, that's when we clipped the 100 yen mark, and now we're up at 102. That news spiked the move because now we're finding there's money starting to flow out of Japan. So what happened is, I mean, if you kind of look at it like, you know, they're trying to drain a pool, and they put a couple of little over the years, they put little pinholes in it, and it just, you know, it rained, and they couldn't drain the pool. Now they put a nice big, you know, half-inch hole in there, right? Well, now the pressure built up so much that the question is it going to collapse that wall? Is that a better metaphor, or you want me to go back to that?
Well, it's a little better.
A little better, so there's no shit in the pool. So
you're not nailing it, but you're getting closer.
I'm trying to make it easy for people to kind of grasp the.
No, I think we got some clue. It's okay. Does anyone have any predictions on how far it could go? I mean, could it go to 110?
125, I heard yesterday.
Wow.
Yep.
That means it went from 75 to 125 is like.
But wasn't it like 200 something a few years ago?
I don't know if it ever was.
Oh yeah, it was.
When the market collapsed, when it was, I think the market was at what, 30,000, and then it collapsed in the '90s. I think was it the late '80s?
It was the 1990s.
I think that could be the '80s.
That could be the '80s.
It could have been the '80s. Yeah,
that was the whole. I want to be Japanese. Remember?
Right. Oh yeah. All the books came out. Oh, we should do things the way the Japanese do. I mean, a friend of mine wrote one of them. It was a big, thick tome. He must have spent forever on it. And it was about how we should just give up and do things the way the Japanese do because they're killing us. Right. And they're going to continue to kill us because everything they do is better. And then that market collapsed, and they have never recovered.
Right. But they do exercise in the morning.
Yeah, they do. Oh, they do that in China, too. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's much of it. I can get up and do a couple of push-ups.
A lot of crazy stuff going on. We're going to have to watch what's going on here. There was also a secondary thing. Last Thursday, there was a rumor that the Fed is going to possibly start scaling back, or, you know, they always have to use certain words, right, to couch things. So the word is tapering. They may taper the bond buying from $85 billion a month. And there was a rumor that John Hilzenrath from the Wall Street Journal, who is known as the mouthpiece of the Fed, he's a writer, usually comes out with an article late on Friday.
So he's, in other words, just – he's the essentially a writer who's actually the – work. Yeah, we have a lot of these.
He's the one that is always the one.
Yeah, you read him and you get what they're talking – what they're thinking.
Right. So the rumor was on Thursday that, hey – the Fed may start tapering or something like that. It may be immediate. Nobody knew. So, right, that's your first leak, right? Because, you know, Hilzenrath's not going to leak the story that he's writing. That would be stupid. Then he's not going to get any more stories from the Fed, right?
Right.
So the Fed then leaked the story.
To him.
Well, no, to somebody else.
Oh, okay.
just saying that, hey, there's maybe some writing going on possibly tomorrow. So meanwhile, Friday comes and goes. Markets were not happy on Thursday. Friday comes and goes into the afternoon, and bam, 7 o'clock at night, the article's out after the market closes. That you know, so what they're doing is they're setting up a trial balloon right now to see how the market, you know, will deal with this. Now, meanwhile, the dollar has gone up dramatically. The bonds have sold off to a point where we're approaching 2% on the 10-year. And some of this may be a little boring for the listeners. I apologize. But there's a lot of important points that are going on here because we're seeing a lot of the cross currents from all these different currency transactions and the things that are happening in Europe and all that. Meanwhile, the stock market hit a record today. Markets were really soft early in the morning today. It was very weak economic numbers all around and some real negative sentiment much lower sentiment.
I have at least three bets that I placed in the period when, you know, when the market was like bouncing around 8,000, it was hit 7.
Yeah.
I put a couple of bets out there saying the market would hit 16 before it hit 6.
Oh, you got a good shot here.
I have a great shot here, and I'm going to have to call these guys. And this, it was so long ago. Oh, I don't remember making that bet. Yeah, well, but I think we got 16 coming up. I mean, I wasn't surprised when it plowed through 15 and 16. I don't know. I think this thing is, once it gets, especially in a, you know, a crappy economy, this really does remind me of 1929 when things started rocking and rolling for no good reason. And which is why I don't have any shorts on our speculative page, because I don't see it's a good idea.
It's very difficult. I mean, today was a really interesting day. The last couple of days were really interesting because I saw, you know, if you kind of envision a chart kind of a stock, a little going up and down. But, you know, generally speaking, over the last however long, it's been, you know, bottom left to top right, you know, just moving along, bouncing along a bit, maybe a little down here, then an up. The last couple of weeks, there have been some ridiculous looking charts, whereas they kind of been bouncing around at a certain level and then they just go vertical. Tesla is a great example.
Yeah, remember when we had that short?
Yeah, well, that wouldn't have been a good idea.
Well, not recently, but
no. Tesla is up. I want to say 50%.
Yeah, it was floating around in April. It was floating around 40. It's up in the 80s.
Yeah, 5 days.
Why?
Well, I don't.
Oh, by the way, I will say this: that S car, which I can't believe they're making any money on it, because I know a number of people who have them.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous car. They're all over the place in L.A. But I had, like, ahead of one of the big venture capitalists had one. I talked to him about it. He says, I would never buy another car from another company. This car is so nice.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they came out with sales numbers. First of all, the stock started moving a little bit prior to this. But they came out with sales numbers, you know, and an earnings report that beat, and they projected more cars that were going to be produced, and there was a lot better numbers than everybody expected. Still, the earnings don't justify where the stock is. As a matter of fact, I gave you a chart there. There's some interesting things that are happening. One of the things that happened, these Green Mountain Coffee is up 25%.
Your buddies.
Yep. Their earnings were actually, their outlook was not so great, but they renewed their deal with Starbucks. And that was a big question. So they had good earnings, not such a great outlook, which is kind of what we're seeing, but the stock spiked. And there's a variety of companies that the same thing happened with. And but then there was some oddball reversals. So again, there was a giant gap for a day. It was up 25%. It's up a few more percent. Now, all of a sudden today, it gaps up on the open. And it does this U-turn. You see that?
Yeah.
This is a 15-minute chart. It does a U-turn. So it's up at 90. I think it – where was the top there? It's about 97. It gaps up from about 86 to 97 on the open today. And then it started moving down. We actually shorted that at 88 and wrote it down to about 82, covered it, went back up to 85, shorted again. I think it closed at somewhere about 82 after hours. But, you know, that was a big move. That was what are we talking about? We're talking about a U-turn of 15%?
Yeah.
Something like that? There's a lot of this going on right now because it almost seems like there's an over-enthusiasm right now for stocks. There have been stock. I'll give you a couple of examples. Triple D, the 3D printer company, right?
Right.
You know them?
Yeah. Okay. No, we played them.
Yep. So we own those. We own them, and I've been in and out of them a bit, but we own them for our clients. And there was an announcement a week ago. Said a few million shares are going to be offered by the inside shareholders, which is exactly opposite of your thesis, right? Insider selling. And
right, but you can't judge. The rule is for this sort of thing, of course, is you can assume that if they're buying, it's a good thing, but because they're selling, it doesn't necessarily mean anything bad because they might just be taking money off the table.
Or it could have been a planned deal. It could be 100 things. I totally agree, but here's the deal. Comes out that you have this announcement. We know there's going to be dilution because they're going to be offering. So, okay, we know there's dilution. And there's insider. Stock's down 7% after hours. Next morning you come in, stock's down about 6%, 7%. By the end of the day, it's flat. Next day, again, you know, reminder, after the close on Thursday, they're going to have this offering that's going to go through, blah, blah, blah. Stock's down 7%. Close of the day, flat to up a little bit. Thursday comes along, and now this is the day they can sell the darn thing, right? We find out that the offering is at $40 a share. Now, so now you got, let's see, $40 a share they're selling at, insider selling, and dilution. So what happens? The stock goes down. By the end of the day, it reverses up 5%. And today, where is it close at? You have that, three Ds?
Yeah, 48.80.
48, 1 week ago. 1 week ago. It was offered at, the insider sold at 40, and now it's at 48.
Yeah.
How weird is that?
That makes zero sense.
There's another stock, Santoris, SNTS. Exact same thing happened. Huge amount of shares being offered, thinly traded stock. The stock goes down 8 or 9%, closes that day even. And it's been up ever since. It's unbelievable. It's like, you know, I'm sure now the insiders are probably going to say, hey, I'll just unload it at the current value. Why would I even go lower?
Yeah.
I researched. I wanted to see, okay, was there maybe a stock buyback program with Triple D? So the insiders were selling, but this company was buying back and holding the thing up? Well, that's interesting, right? Maybe. Nope. I didn't find that. So I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But it is a very high speculation market right now. Here's a little tidbit for you. The margin levels, you know, the leverage and margin levels where you could borrow money to buy stocks. You have a $100,000 portfolio, and let's say you could leverage it up to $150,000. So now your leverage margin. Mm-hmm. Margin levels are the same as they were at the height in 2008. Which is good and bad. It's good because there's a lot of enthusiasm. It's bad because any kind of move exacerbates the return on the portfolio. So that's kind of, I thought, kind of interesting on that. Okay, I got some other things. Totally different. Totally away from here. Twitter valued at almost $10 billion. Ooh, pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, for a little microblogging service that used to not work ever.
Well, it's still kind of.
No, I haven't seen too much outage lately. Have you?
No, I use it still. You know, I find it's okay.
I find it the best out of all of them. I mean, I don't like using the kids like the Instagram and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Well, I hear you, but we're also a lot older, so
what it's still dumb.
Okay.
I don't care how old we are.
So, but anyways, valued at $10 billion by one of the investors who put some money in recently and then possibly thinking about doing an IPO, which I thought was cool. Bloomberg is in major hot water. Have you been tracking the story at all?
I know about the story. I haven't been following it, and I haven't looked into it too much, but there is an issue with invasion of privacy. I guess it's almost like they've got all these terminals out there. I think there's 300,000 of them or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they are using, I guess, in the back room, somebody's taking a look at what's going on those things and saying, hey, you know, we can trade this with this information.
Right. So what happened, I have a Bloomberg terminal. So one of the things
all the pros do.
Yeah. So and it's not cheap, by the way. It's actually ridiculously expensive.
Yeah. So what is it?
We pay like $1,700 a month
Yeah,
for one terminal.
Oh, and you have to share it?
Yeah, it's only available one user at a time. The one I have, I could log on from anywhere I want. If the person has what's called Bloomberg Anywhere, you know, the basic program installed,
yeah.
I have a triple bio reading authentication program I use.
So you can't really cheat it.
No, so you can't even really log in from like a remote terminal, because what happens is this. So I log in, I put my name and password in. Then what I do is I have a little card, I turn it on, and I swipe my thumbprint over it. When it accepts my thumbprint, I hold the card, like a credit card thing, up to the light that's blinking on the screen. And it's doing some kind of a code. The light then is translated, I suppose, and is synchronized with my card. My card gives me four random numbers that I have to now input, and now I'm in.
Wow.
The problem is I've tried to do remote logins with it. You can't, because the light doesn't flash correctly.
Hmm.
So it's pretty, it's all thumbprint and all that. Now, so Bloomberg now, the journalist had the ability to track certain things that the users were doing. For example, maybe what stocks they were looking at, what functions they were using. So let's say that a bunch of the Goldman equity guys were all of a sudden, they noticed that they were all hitting this one stock and looking at the financials, and then looking at another stock and looking at their financials, and maybe kind of put two and two together and say, hey, maybe this guy's buying this guy, because they're doing their research that way.
Right.
So you speculate that. Or, for example, you notice that, hey, how come this guy, this high-end executive, hasn't logged onto his Bloomberg terminal in 10 days? Is he on vacation or is he fired? So it seems this was being allowed for some time, and the government uses Bloomberg too, by the way. Many governments use Bloomberg. So now they're like, wait a second. Are you telling us that you can possibly, how deep is this? I mean, can you read our emails? The Bloomberg emails, the Bloomberg chats? What kind of level are we talking about here? If you allow your journalist to kind of peek at what was going on, even if it was just a cursory look at that, I mean, that shouldn't be allowed either.
Right. But it's sure tempting.
Mm-hmm. Now they're in all sorts of hot water. The Bank of England's involved now. The Fed, the Treasury, they're pissed. Now, in response
to
this.
Well, by the way, in Europe, they have some real kick-ass privacy laws that we don't, that would put them in serious trouble.
Which is why I assume the BOE is now taken over, the Bank of England. Because I noticed that just on the news before, that something about the BOE is taking the lead on this or something.
Yeah, they would have the most, the biggest clout.
Hmm. So in response to this, Bloomberg says, yes, we're doing this. Not good. Hey, obviously we're going to do an internal investigation, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So wait, it gets worse.
Yeah.
So I get an email this morning from, I think his name is Dan Dickeroff. And his email says, dear Andrew, I just want to let you know that we at Bloomberg really want to make sure that all of our users are very much abreast of all the things that are happening with the company. And for that, I just started a blog, I swear, is what he says. I started a blog. You could read it here and find out what's going on with the company, and I will be writing in it regularly. Hey, just want to let you know, we have some issues. You probably have read that, and, we apologize, but, nothing. Just that this guy started a blog. It was like, did this guy panic and just send it out to every user without even – it wasn't the PR department. It wasn't the – it was unbelievable. It was so lame.
Huh.
Lame. So Bloomberg, we'll see what happens with that. Let's see. All right. So Google's coming out with some streaming music service they announced tonight that will be available possibly as early as this week. I'm not sure if it's going to be a pay for, but if we know Google will probably be a freebie for a while.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's going to be just for their OS, because they're kind of going that way these days, right? Doing a lot of things just for, their Google OS or Chrome and all that. But I guess we got to watch these other companies that are out there and kind of what toll it takes on them, and particularly Pandora.
Yeah, what is Pandora looking like?
Looking like a short.
What is Pandora? What is the symbol for the pand?
P.
Just P?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, nice. 16. Let's see what it looks like. And there may be shorts out there. I mean, this Pandora's.
It was up 7%
today. I think
today.
We shorted them once before.
Maybe. Our, it was up 7% today, and now it's...
it's way up there. Jeez, this should be down to $7.50 at 17.
Yep, and it's down about... I think I saw it after the news broke, about 3 or 4%. This could be... theoretically, this is one of those stocks that can get whacked the next couple of days pretty good. You know, it could be down 20% easily. So if you want to participate in that when we talk about the thing... later, we'll have to share that one again.
I wouldn't mind that. And even though I'm not really for shorting at this point, this could be a good one.
You know, it's funny.
You'd be better short at 20, but go on.
Yeah. One of the things is when I find that nobody wants to short anymore, that's the time to short.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
So, you know, another story about Google, Larry Page. You remember there was about, I guess it was about... let me think how long ago this was. I guess it was maybe about a year ago or so. Larry Page mysteriously wasn't at one of the Google earnings meetings.
Yeah.
There was something about him having a sore throat.
Yeah, I can't speak.
Laryngitis.
I can't talk anymore.
Do you hear what happened today?
You know, this is funny because I just heard about it, and it caught me a little bit off guard. I guess he had some virus or something that struck his vocal cords, and he's got vocal cord paralysis.
I don't know what that is.
I can't tell you how to talk like this now, which is really not using much of your vocal cords.
It left his voice softer.
Softer.
And affects his breathing, which...
I wonder what that means.
I don't see how that's going to... But obviously something's going on there. Now, I'm not trying to be morbid, but if you recall, we had a similar situation where there was this very mild case of the flu and then an issue of malnutrition. And then remember that with Steve Jobs?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's nothing, it's nothing, it's nothing. And then all of a sudden we see he gets a liver transplant.
Page is not – I met him like such a long time ago. I don't think he's a smoker. I don't know. If he was a smoker, which he might be. I mean, I don't know. Let's take a look. See if there's any reference to him smoking. Larry Page, smoker. Larry Page, smoker, says nothing seriously wrong and /. Google's helping its employees quit smoking. CEO Larry Page is on a mission to remodel his company's organizational structure and preserve startup mentality. Larry Page has throat cancer.
Well,
according to Curoshin, this is like a gossip sheet. It's been reported that Apple co-founder smoked pot, took LSD, to putting. It's possible that there's something bad,
right?
But this, you know, these guys aren't going to be pull Steve Jobs and start eating, wheatgrass to cure themselves.
Well, he was always... Steve Jobs was a vegan prior to all this, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, moving along, let me talk about crude oil for a second.
And okay, by the way, I don't think it would... Not that anything bad should happen to Page, but even if he quit the job, it's not like he is the greatest CEO in the world that can't be replaced.
No, he's very replaceable.
Yeah.
I mean, Google... Actually, I'll go so far as saying it's possible that Google could run itself.
Yeah, I kind of get that impression, too.
You know, it's kind of like just let it go. Let's talk about crude oil for a second, because some really interesting things that have happened of late, and crude's not moving. Tomorrow is a big day. Tomorrow is the 10:30 in the morning as the Department of Energy puts out their inventory numbers. Now, I want to give you some statistics that are very interesting. Okay. So first of all, we do know that inventories, the amount that we're holding in inventories in terms of raw crude prior to being refined, we knew it was at 20-year record highs. That was the first. Well, last night I dug in a little bit and I talked to some people and we did some research. It turns out it's not only at a 20-year high. The only reason why you get the report that it's at a 20-year high, because that's the report of the weekly inventories, okay? Weekly inventories only go back about 20 years.
Hmm.
If you look at the monthly inventories, we're at the highest inventory since 1931.
Hmm.
There's far fewer cars on the road back then.
And by the way, there was an article in today's New York Times saying that people are driving less and the culture's changing and
young people. That was the one about the young people, right?
My son's a good example. He doesn't drive. And but it's that whole group.
What do they do? They hitchhike?
No, they take public transportation. They carpool with their buddies, or there's just always a bunch of them. I don't know what it is. It's just something's changed. I think they're all anticipating the driverless car, which is definitely where things are going to head. I mean, I think we're 2 years away. I mean, although I've talked to people on both sides of this, including people who think it's bull crap. And I've taken the side that these driverless cars are going to be the future.
And yeah, we got to redo some of the roads and all that. You have to have electronics on each of the highways.
No.
You don't think so?
No. Now we got so much computing power now that the car can see where it's going. It just can, you know. And Google Maps is part of the program, and so the car will just go take you where you want to go. You just, you know, push a button, the car shows up at your house. You jump in, you go someplace, drops you off. I mean, the amount of social disruption this will cause is astonishing. But I think
the hovercrafts. And you could stack them two by two on the highway. Seriously.
Yeah, well, that'd be something to see. Cool. It would kind of mess up your hair.
Yeah, possibly. Got to have a roof over it. So now let me tell you some more things. Saudis are pumping more oil. They just came out with that. There's less use, so you just mentioned. There's efficiency, China, young people. The U.S. has more exploration finds than we've ever had, right?
Yeah.
The U.S. dollar is over 83, which usually has an inverse relationship to oil. And the IEA came out with a major paper today that talked about a shock, major supply shock, which is going to hit the markets. And it was a very, very bearish article, or not article, paper, by a petroleum, you know, group.
Yeah.
Now, this is not like just a research piece by J.P. Morgan or something like that, right? This is, you know.
Well,
now,
it's
still at 90, well, it was 96, 95. Last week it went to 93. Yeah. That same day, it V'd and went right back to 96.
It's 94 now, and it went up.
Yeah. So we're going to see tomorrow, but I am leaning hard. The fundamentals and the basic structure are not right for long crude, except for one thing: massive speculation that is likened to what we saw years ago. And I'm not sure that we're going to get to that level.
No, yeah, this thing's ready to crash. It's outrageous. There's no excuse for this thing to be at 94. It should be at 50.
Right.
60.
And one of the things that's happening now is the European Commission is investigating major oil companies over suspected anti-competitive agreements related to the submission of prices, according to Platts, which, of course, is a unit of McGraw-Hill, which, you know, by the way, they changed the symbol. We'll talk about that in a second. That's going on, and it's crazy. We'll see what happens tomorrow, but it should be, you know, the problem is if you have even a slightly bullish inventory number, in other words, the inventories they thought were going to be building by X amount, and they maybe were flat, let's just say, but you still have the huge inventory numbers, they'll still push up oil. Even with the dollar being as high as it is. So, two more quick things. We'll get to our little game. Microsoft, rumor that they were buying the Barnes & Noble component of the Nook. I think that was squashed. I don't get why they would do that.
No, it makes no sense. They got the Surface, and there's no reason
exactly
for this.
Okay. And we'll maybe leave this to the next one, how investment banking firms continue to have almost flawless quarters of trading inside of their proprietary or the trading groups. You know, they have like two days that they lost money in a quarter. You know, and how's that possible? I don't care how good you are. How's that possible?
Yeah, it's not.
But they do. It's true.
Yeah, well, something's up.
It's only one. There's one answer. They know the outcome.
Apparently.
And the only way you can know the outcome is that you make the outcome. So they go in, they have it so that they know where they're going to put the market by the end of the day.
Right.
To make that happen, you know?
But that won't last long.
Yeah, it's been lasting a couple of years by now, but, you know, who knows?
It's like this grease thing.
What is that? How does that happen? I mean, it's not only a small – it's not like – so the news is that Fitch this afternoon upgraded Greece's debt from a triple C, which is junk, 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 to a B minus. We're not talking about triple C to a C plus or C or to a B minus.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I mean, it's possible that they've cleaned up some of their act and all this stuff, but it just maybe it's just because of the implicit backing they have from the Eurozone.
It must be. Apparently, Slovenia is the next company or country to go into the tank.
Mm. Nobody even talks about Cyprus anymore.
No, I guess that's all been worked out.
Yeah, the good news is it gives us plenty of things to talk about on the show. And because there's so many things that happen that clear up, but people, you know, we always have something fresh to talk about.
Yeah, because it's a mess out there.
Nobody cares.
Well, I'm sure some people care, but they
oh, yeah.
they're writing it for what it's worth.
Right. And we'll see tomorrow, I think Thursday, what's happening with the CPI numbers. But I'll tell you something. When you look at the economic numbers in the U.S., aside from the jobs number, et cetera, it's still a little bit, you know, it's I don't want to call it weak. It's just it's nothing. The economic numbers are not looking – the manufacturing is definitely soft.
Yeah.
The employment's okay, but the manufacturing
well,
is very
even
soft.
That.
Yeah, well, it's not great, but it's
if you take a look at shadow stats mm-hmm. and look at the true unemployment, we're approaching 25%.
No.
Yeah.
I think it's 10.5.
No, no. Go to shadow stats and look at the true numbers. If you were calculating this in the 30s, this is the number you'd get, people that aren't working.
Mm. Yeah. Well, fortunately
– you haven't been looking at that enough.
I thought that was for the U25 number, you know, the number that – or U16 number that – or U14.
U6.
U6, yeah. Anyway, thank you.
I think that's – yeah, it's a shrimp size. I think that is a running around 15% or something, that number. They don't like talking about that number anymore.
No.
But what's gotten me, if you go to shadowstats.com, people can see this, is that everything tracked, you know, shadowstats was higher, and then the U6 and the U2, and then they were moving along, and, you know, kind of in a, like, you know, those things that you used to have, you take a chalk and you stick it in these different holes, and then you go into the blackboard and you can make, you know, these parallel lines. It was tracking perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
And now, at some time in 2009, I believe, during the Obama administration, the shadow stat number took off in one direction, and the government numbers went down the other way. This is bogus. We're in bigger trouble than anyone wants to admit.
Well, the good news is that the stock market being up cures all ills, it seems.
Yeah, it's heading to 16,000.
Yeah, 16,000 and beyond. So I do remember that, by the way. I do remember that and the giant compass that we used to use at the blackboard. Hey, did you have blackboards or green boards?
I had blackboards.
Blackboards. I had blackboards most of the time. I didn't like the green boards. They always looked dusty to me. Now they don't even have any of those.
May have switched to green at when I was in high school. But, of course, now it's whiteboards.
Now it may be whiteboards.
I think.
Now,
I don't know.
Now it's overheads with these really cool projector things.
Yeah, that'd be – yeah, it's better.
Yeah.
The dust. Too much dust.
The dust. And you had to be elected somebody. Okay, who's going to clean the erasers? Remember that?
Yeah, you pound them.
Oh, and you just go up your nose, and God knows what was going on.
Yeah, very bad.
Yep. Good old days, though. Good old days.
All right, let's see what we have in our stocks.
Now, I got to tell you a couple things. First of all, this is just a little game we play. You can look at this at any time. As a matter of fact, somebody wrote me today. They're like, hey, how do you make that portfolio thing happen? We do have actually a template that we could send you. That will do something like this, where you can put your stocks in, and you can enter and buy, or you know, long or short, buy or short, the entry price and what your performance is, and a few other things. Plus, there's a whole host of what they call mnemonics that are available, like the price earnings ratio, their EPS rating, all sorts of things you can put on this, not just the change in the day and the description. So, what we do is we put the symbol in, and then everything else completes itself across on this spreadsheet. And you have to put how much you bought it for. But everything else kind of works itself out. Anyway, so if you want to, just you can write in. You'll find us somewhere. Put a little. Or go to the DH Unplugged website to contact us, and we'll send you a link to how to get there. But this is just a game we play. We are not recommending, suggesting, buying or selling any of the securities we talk about. John C. Dvorak, Andrew Horowitz, or my clients, our clients, Horowitz Company, may in fact own some of the positions. We do reference that. Anyway. Bravo on the Live Nation, and wow on the Cree. That is You, my friend. Those are good. Corning. Yeah. Did I leave out Corning? I left that Corning. So the Live Nation's up 41%. Corning's up 24%. And another long holding, right? Those are in the beginning of last year, the end of last year.
Yeah, these are long. These 12-12.
Wow.
12-12-12.
Mm-hmm. Amazon, amazingly, is still holding up there. Short. Up 5%. The corn. Corn's still getting hurt. Bumper crop this year, by the way. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Last year there was a
drought. It has to be a short, yeah.
So this is going to be a bumper crop.
Yeah, this is a good call.
McGraw Hill, plug it along, up 19% after they're going to basically be shut down by the government. So there you go. Murphy Oil, good stuff, up 5%. Cree, up 35%. AIG stopped out last week.
I think, by the way, Cree is still a good buy. Cree is now advertising on television.
Really?
Yep.
What, their light bulbs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they have Cree's the LEDs,
right?
So those are cool, long lasting, energy efficient. AGCO, which I think makes the agricultural farming stuff, right? The really cool.
Yeah,
that's up 11.5%. RCM, which we have no idea what it does, down 1%. NuStar down 1.8%. BioCrisp not going anywhere, down 5%. I just got a flash. The Nikkei is now up 45% year to date. Just to let you know.
Hmm.
The short Japanese bonds up 5.5%. Las Vegas Sands, even today when they lost their lawsuit, stock plummeted for about 15, 20 seconds and then came right back up. People love this, even though there's a slowdown in Macau, there's a slowdown in Vegas, and there's also lawsuits against Adelson and his group, but down 6% on that. Clean energy fuels up 5% or 4.5%. JP Morgan up 3%. And I'm going with a short on oil through an ETF for next week. And a short on Pandora.
Yeah, I like the Pandora short, but I'm going to beg off of it for at least another week.
Okay.
I may come in later. Just want to see what this market is like pushing.
Yep.
I do have one, though, I want to play.
Yeah,
dig it up. Mm-hmm. It's where is it? Yeah, well, this is kind of a penny stock. I hate to put these on there because you get wiped out so quickly. But if we put a little more leeway, since it's kind of a penny stock,
okay, we could do that.
Unitech Global Services.
Oh boy, what's the symbol? How many letters does it have?
It's got 10, and it says pink at the end.
That's bad.
No, it's not. It's UNTK.
UNTK. Okay, got that. We'll put that in there. UNTK. And what's the price right now?
It's $1.47.
So you want to extend to a 15% stop?
Yeah, I think we better.
15% stop on penny stock. Okay. Deere's coming out with earnings, which is going to be tomorrow. We also have Macy's coming out with earnings and a whole host of retail this week as well. We're going to see how well they're doing. The retail has been doing just moving up dramatically and just looks beautiful. We'll see how those play out. I mean, there's a lot of high expectations. JCPenney will also be out. I think there's going to be a lot more people watching the JCPenney earnings. It's kind of like when you drive down the road and there's a horrible accident, but everybody has to stop.
Oh, you have to slow down.
Yeah, everybody has to look at it and all that.
Yeah.
That's going to be what's happening at the JCPenney earnings,
I would think.
Yeah. So, you know, already they've come out. They blamed the other guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, finger. Yeah. It's your fault.
Yeah, it's his fault. And so they brought back the guy they fired to bring in the other guy.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing well.
Ludicrous.
And their stores are down like 29%, same store sales, time over time and period over period and all that. They pre-announced already, and the stock then moved up dramatically into it. So there's probably a lot of short covering going on into the earnings. So we'll see what happens there. But I don't know. You want to just a side bet? As to just a small bet, just a, you know, a discussion about what's going to happen post JCP earnings. Is the stock going to, you know, move up dramatically, or is it just going to just flop?
I don't know. What do you think? You have to, your idea. I mean, you jump in.
I mean, I would think that there is a lot of people that have there's a heavy negative sentiment on JCPenney, heavy short interest on JCPenney. And, you know, for them to really disappoint at this point, although it's running up, I don't know where they went today, but it's running up into this, I think they're up 2.5% today. It's running up into the number.
Yeah.
So
it's at 1862. You know,
So, I mean, I would think that in this market
condition... It was pretty much no after hours.
Really? Yeah. I would think in this market condition that anything other than an absolute abysmal failure, you know, a real horrible number compared to what they even projected 2 weeks ago, is going to probably rally the stock.
Yeah, you know, I'd have to agree with that, so I don't think we can go at each other on that one.
Right, but but who knows? You know,
no,
sentiment could turn in 2 days on this market, which, you know, things are really extended, overvalued, you know, watch out.
So why don't we do this? Mm-hmm. Let's take our stock pick list and put mm-hmm. JCPenney on there with a new color, which is just to watch it. So it's on a watch list, but neither one of us are making a claim to it.
The more difficult decision is what color.
I would think the green we're using purple.
How about like a pale blue?
Oh, blue would be good. We have like no blue on this thing.
Yeah, let's see that. Let's see how that looks. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We got that. Oh yeah. Yeah. It looks like a sky blue.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yep. So a sky blue is a watching. I got to put that somewhere.
The watch list.
Watch list. And I'll put it in an italics. Think about that. Italics and light sky blue.
It's a curiosity thing.
Yeah, if you need a designer, by the way, I'm available for these kind of things.
Yeah, take a look at the spreadsheet and you'll see how amazingly gorgeous this thing is.
It's beautiful. It's a rainbow.
I'm waiting for it to turn all green. That's what I'm looking for.
It's pretty close.
We've had that a couple times.
Yeah, looking good here. All right, so we'll talk next week. And by next week, we will have some further information on, if the Japan floodgate and wall is going to break down, using that analogy, and we'll see if anybody took a bite of the dog shit pie.
We will. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll talk again on Tuesday. It should be not a problem. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.